If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
You know, any deal I've gotten so far has been through relationships, either brokers or sponsors, whoever it may be. And I wouldn't have got those if I kept bouncing around from market to market, because you wouldn't have a chance to build those relationships. You go in, you look at a deal or two, and then you move to another market. So it's like you're always starting from scratch.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Charles Seaman is a native of Brooklyn, New York, and currently resides in Charlotte, North Carolina, and serves as Senior Acquisition Manager and Asset Manager of Three Oaks Management. He actively works to locate high-performing multifamily deals throughout the southeastern region of the United States. He is responsible for all of the company's underwriting, analysis, and contract negotiation and capital raising to make sure that the deals close. Hey, Charlie, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you on today. You've got a deep bench of experience in the real estate space, and especially in multifamily. And you know, the same questions I ask everybody when they come on is, where'd you start, where are you now, and how did you get there?
So for the purposes of keeping this brief, one of my strong points, I'll start with, you know, way back when in 2005. That's where I first got exposed to commercial real estate. And at that time, for lack of a better term, I was 20 years old, and I was young, dumb, and broke. Mm-hmm. And I started working for a guy who was a commercial real estate investor, and I was fortunate to learn a lot from him and really got to assist him in a lot of different capacities. He had a few other businesses, you know, plumbing companies, some bars and restaurants. And my role there during my tenure included helping him manage all of his different businesses and properties. And of those different things, the real estate side was always the one that I gravitated most to. And his portfolio was a mix of more traditional commercial. At that time, it initially included retail, restaurant, office space, and then later on went to include some multifamily and industrial. So I got to learn all different things from, you know, finding deals to analyzing them, getting them financed, finding tenants for them, managing them, and really being involved in the entire process. So I was fortunate to get a really good experience working with a very successful investor that taught me a lot. And it was very hands-on, but it was a great way to learn.
Right, man, that's fantastic. Not many of us get that opportunity to get the front row seat without also writing the check to do it.
Right, and I've written the check to do it too, so I can attest to being on that side as well.
Sure.
But in this case, you know, I got a lot of really good experience from a very successful guy without really having that intentionally designed at the beginning.
Right. So then what'd you do? When you transitioned out of working with him, what was your next step?
So I initially intended to be there for 2 or 3 years. Lo and behold, I guess I got a little too comfortable. I wound up being there for 14. And finally, in my mid-30s, I said, well, I'm not getting any younger. It's time to make a move. So at that point, I decided, okay, let's do something different. And I always knew that I wanted to invest in real estate myself. And I also knew that I ultimately wanted to run my own business and do my own thing. So around 2014 or 15, even though I like commercial real estate and that's really where my skill set and my passion was, I also knew that I personally didn't have the budget to go out there and start buying commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. I initially dabbled in single family, dabbled in wholesaling, took a few courses, went to a lot of networking events. And what I determined is two things. One, I don't really like single family as much. And two, I just didn't want to do it. I'd have to learn a whole new skill set and kind of start from scratch. So after spending some time and some money on that, I determined, you know what, let me see what I can do to get involved in commercial. Because, you know, I had the skill set for commercial, but I didn't have the budget for it. And then around 2016, that was around the first time I heard about syndication. And I started learning what that was. And I said, oh, you know what, I like this. This could have some potential. Yeah. I could use the skill set I already have and then just wind up using investors' money to get deals funded. So I said, okay, if we can do this, maybe I can make it work and go right into the commercial space.
Sure.
So lo and behold, I did wind up writing a check and taking some courses with a national guru. And overall, I had a good experience. So I'm not going to do any bashing like some people might.
Sure.
But I was glad to learn that a lot of the things I picked up there were things that I was already doing in my job anyway. So even though I already knew them, I was glad to reinforce that the ways I was doing them were the right ways. Mm-hmm. That went a big way. And the one thing that I did learn a little bit about was capital raising, because That side was new to me. The guy that I worked for used his own capital, so he didn't need to go out and raise capital from investors, but I knew that I wasn't in that position, at least not to go out and fund it fully.
Right.
So then from that point, from mid-2017, I started working about 10 to 15 hours a week in my spare time on the syndication business on top of my job. And at that point, I was probably working 60 to 90 hours a week, depending on the week. So I said, whatever it is, I have to make it a priority, because if I don't, it's not going to get done. So, you know, when I worked in my job normally, I really didn't take much of a lunch break most days. But I said, when I started doing this, I said, you know what, I have to make some time. Even if it's 10, 15, 20 minutes, if I can get half an hour, great. And what I would do is schedule phone calls during those times. And I would speak to brokers and speak to anybody else I needed to, and do whatever I could to move things forward. Because at that time, I lived in New York, and I was looking primarily in the Southeast. Well, initially, I was looking all over the place. That was one of the mistakes I'll get into in a minute. But eventually, after we settled on an area, we started in the Southeast. And I knew that I had to speak with people during normal hours, because nobody was going to be receptive to taking my calls at 10 or 11 o'clock at night when I got home from work. So I said, let me make it a priority. I have to schedule appointments in advance, use time wisely. And then when I get home, then I can do underwriting and things that don't really require other people's, you know, input. Right. So I said, okay, let me just use whatever time I can, structure it as best I can, and make progress. So about a year and a half passed, submitted a lot of offers, looked at a lot of deals, but we hadn't gotten anything yet. My partners and I, by this point, had decided to focus in the Charlotte area, and we were focusing any around the Carolinas, really. So I said, okay, let's make it a priority. And I decided whatever market we chose as our target area, I was going to relocate to put myself right in the center of it. And that's what I did in June 2019.
Wow.
Yeah. So I said, okay, how do you get to know the market better than living and working in it every day? You know, I can learn so much from phone calls and emails and speaking to the people and reading things online, but, you know, I'll learn a lot more just by throwing myself right in there. So I said, okay, let's do something different. Then at that point, I went forward, made the move, and lo and behold, about 3 months later, we closed our first deal. So that was a 92-unit deal right outside of the Atlanta market, and it worked out really well because we got that deal through a sponsor relationship, and then we wound up closing on it.
Sure.
And in September this year, 2020, we wound up closing on a second deal, and now as the year ends, we have two more on the contract, so things are starting to come together. We're making some real traction.
Talk to us if you can, because we jumped kind of from working a W-2 and working for somebody else to then my partners and I. How did you locate your partners?
So, you know what, it worked out with the national guru that I attended events at. I actually met them at one of the events, actually a few of the events. And the first event we met, you know, we went out for lunch, we had a good vibe. And then I saw them again the following month at a different event. And after the end of the second event, I threw the idea out there and said, listen, you know, I have a job. One of them had a business. The other one was a retired, you know, CFO. And I said, you know, we're all busy. We have different things in our lives. And we could probably make a lot more progress working together than we could working separately.
Sure.
So they agreed, and we kind of formed an informal partnership, and we started working together. It was probably about 10 months later or so that we formed a formal partnership and an entity and went forward with that.
Right.
In retrospect, maybe doing it a little bit sooner may have been a smarter move, but we were just moving forward and said, okay, let's work on finding a deal and putting all the pieces together. There's definitely a few lessons that I learned that I would certainly impart with anybody listening. Four things I tell anybody, especially if they're looking to syndicate. It's one thing if you have your own capital, and if you do, you know, that's a great position to be in. It'll probably cut a lot of these steps out. But if you're syndicating, which I have a feeling many listeners are, then there's four things in particular I'm going to recommend starting out. One is to find the partner, because initially when you're first starting out, there may not be a lot of work. You may just be gaining traction and gaining momentum, and you may not have a lot happening. But if you work at this for a while, you are going to gain momentum. And what will also happen is you're going to get a lot busier. And for all of us that have other jobs, other businesses, families, and different life obligations, it's going to be very tough to be filling all the roles that you need to by yourself. So most people are starting this business as a side hustle until they're in a position to eventually make it a full-time business. So I would recommend finding at least one partner, maybe even two, because you'll need somebody to divvy the workload up with. And what I would recommend to people, and this is also something we should have done a lot sooner, is assigning specific roles. Mm. And I would recommend having one person be the acquisition guy, who's really in charge of the broker relations and finding deals and underwriting them. And the other person being the investor relations person, who's really in charge of investor outreach and marketing. And those are going to be very important roles because you'll need both of those things, because you're not closing a deal without money. And even if you have money, you're not closing anything if you don't have a deal. So you need both buckets full. Then a second thing I'd recommend is picking a target area. So you guys probably heard me mention that initially we were looking all over the place, and that was a huge mistake. But let me further define it. It wasn't really all over the place. It was just anywhere east of the Mississippi River. So anybody familiar with the map of the U.S. knows that that covers a fair amount of ground. And 1 month I was in Ohio, once I was in Indiana, twice in Kentucky, one of my partners in Tennessee. And then finally, after about a year, we got smart and said, you know, it's about time we pick a target area. You know, we're wasting too much time, because the problem is, there's two problems with it. One, you're spending a lot of time learning about the market. So the benefit to having a target market is you don't need to spend time learning about that market every single time. Mm-hmm. But the first time you're looking at it, there's going to be some time spent learning, okay, what are the economics of this market? How is it functioning? And what are the drivers? So that's a lot of time that you don't need to spend if you're focusing on a particular market. Then the second advantage is relationships. So when you go into a new market, you're always the low man on the totem pole. And the way that you get deals in this business primarily is through relationships. You know, any deal I've gotten so far has been through relationships, either brokers or sponsors, whoever it may be. And I wouldn't have got those if I kept bouncing around from market to market, because you wouldn't have a chance to build those relationships. You go in, you look at a deal or two, and then you move to another market. So it's like you're always starting from scratch. So pick a market as soon as you can. Ideally, you want to do it before you start looking at deals, but maybe look at a few just to get a feel for where you want to be, and then narrow down a market that is a good fit for you. Third thing I would tell you is going to be find investors. And it sounds like that might be an obvious one, but you'd be surprised how many people don't do it. And I have to say, we were guilty of that as well. So that was another mistake we made. And it wasn't until our first deal and our first capital raise that we realized, wow, our network's not what we thought it was. Let me rephrase this. So my partners and I have really good networks. I knew a lot of people from New York that had a lot of money that were buying commercial properties. But the reality is, the guys I knew have more than enough money where they can go out and buy the same deals I am. They don't need me. Right. And most of them aren't passive guys that want to invest passively in my deals. They're active guys that can run their own deals. And they, truthfully, they don't have a need to invest with me. And my partners come from a single family background. You know, one of them owns a wholesaling business, and they've also done some flips together. So their background was really with single family real estate investors and a lot of active investors. So one hint I would give a lot of people out there is that people who are actively investing in their own deals probably aren't going to passively invest in yours. So it's a different demographic. And one of the things we learned is that even though our network is really good, it's not good for investing with us in this business. And starting out, the people you want to attract are high income earning professionals. And for anybody listening, you'll want to dial that down even more and be more specific. But from a high level, you want people that, you know, maybe like doctors or lawyers or accountants, that they make good six-figure incomes. You know, they're not rich, they're not poor, but they probably have some money sitting in a savings account or a retirement account that's not performing the way they want it to. And they don't have the time, the desire, or the energy, or the expertise to go out and run their own deals. So they're happier to just simply give you their money and expect a return on it. And those will be your target base of investors starting out. Eventually, as you gain some experience and gain a track record, you'll be qualifying to have equity groups and different groups partner with you, but starting out, high income earning professionals are where you need to target. Then the last thing, and most important, I would say, is sponsor relationships. And I can't overstate this one enough, because I think in retrospect, even if you fell short on the other things, just doing this one thing would help you grow your syndication business probably faster than anything else. And a sponsor, in essence, is just somebody who signs on a loan for you. They're also referred to as a key principal. But if you do a good job building a relationship with them, you can use their names and their reputations for a lot more than that. Now, for anybody listening out there, let me just throw a disclaimer out there. Do not do this without getting their permission. Otherwise, they'll probably never talk to you again. But make sure you have a good relationship with them. And then if you do, ask the sponsor, can I use your name and track record when I speak to brokers and when I speak to investors? And just think of it. Does it sound better when you go to the broker and say, hey, Mr. Broker, my name is Charles Seaman. I haven't done any deals. You know, why don't you give me a shot at something off market? Or, hey, Mr. Broker, I'm Charles Seaman. I'm working with Joe Smith. Joe has 2,500 units, and I'm his local boots on the ground in this area. So which one do you think is likely to get you a better deal? Just keep that in mind.
So are you paying those people as mentors of yours? Or are you paying, or are they, you said they're coming on as part of the general partnership? Or how is that person who you are, you know, basically trading on their name. How are they getting compensated for that?
So with that, we would bring them in as part of the general partnership.
Okay.
So that's an important point. Let me touch on that. So for anybody who does that, even if you get their permission, make sure you use that person as the sponsor on the loan, because, you know, if you're going to use their name and their reputation, you know, give them a little incentive to want to do business with you. Make sure you do that. Don't flip-flop and go with somebody else.
Right. And that's a strategy that you guys have employed.
Yep. That's worked very well for us. Actually, with our first deal, the gentleman that sponsored that for us, we had looked at several deals with him, some of which we put in offers on. And probably for the better part of a year, he knew we were actively looking. But for one reason or another, none of the offers got accepted. And then around April of 2019, he had sent us a deal because he primarily invests in the Atlanta market. And he got a deal that he was familiar with because he actually owned other properties in the same area. Mm-hmm. And it was a 92-unit deal. But at that point, he was doing 200, 300, and 400-unit deals. So he had no interest in doing a 92-unit deal himself. So he thought of us because we had been constantly sending him stuff and constantly in contact. And he knew that we were serious. So he said, would you guys be interested in this? As it worked out, he sent us a deal. He sponsored it. And he also owns a property management company that we hired to manage it. So it worked out very well. But that's what relationship building can do for you if you do a good job with that.
Right. So let's recap those four things. First off was to find partners, right?
Yep.
The second one was to, what was number two?
The target market.
Find your target market. The third one was to find your investors.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth one is, how would you recap the fourth one?
Find sponsors or key principals.
Okay.
And build good relationships with them.
Right. Sponsors are key principles. Charlie, that's a wealth information that you've just shared with them and very tangible action steps. I love that. So thanks for sharing those with us. Let's jump into the final four.
Sure.
If you were to distill everything you know that you've learned so far in real estate down to one piece of advice and you're giving it to an investor, what would that one piece of advice be?
Relationships. Relationships are by far your most important thing in this business. And that's true of many businesses, but real estate is very much a people business. A commercial broker is not going to award you a deal if they don't have the faith that you can close on it. So they want to, most importantly, they have to have faith in your ability to perform. If they like you, it's even better. But at the very least, they have to believe that you can close. Because if not, they're not going to jeopardize their professional reputation by saying, let me give Joe Smith a shot if I don't think he can close.
Right, right.
So be credible and put the right people on your team and make the right connections to get the deals done.
That's fantastic. What's one way or one thing you're doing to stay on top of your game?
Staying active in the market every single day. I think that's often the best way to do it. Consistency is a long way. And for anybody just starting out who's working, you know, you may not have 40, 50, 60 hours a week. Take 5 hours, do something. Read up on the market, stay educated, speak to people. Start going to some networking events, even if they're virtual, and just stay in touch with the market.
Right. Man, that's awesome. And for those of you who are listening, this is being recorded on December 24th, 2020. And Charlie is putting his words into action here at 2 p.m. and actually recording this podcast. So he is very active. Charlie, when it comes to giving back, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place?
So there's two things that I'm primarily doing right now. So the biggest way that I'm giving back is by helping other investors. One thing I do is each Saturday, I run a free underwriting course on Zoom. And I open that up to people. So if anybody wants to come, they're welcome to. We underwrite an actual multifamily deal. And we do it for the benefit of education and networking. So it's usually a fairly small, intimate group. But I extend that offer to anybody listening. So if they want to join it, they're welcome to.
That's awesome. How do we get in touch with you? And then how do we sign up for that underwriting class?
So they can either text me 347-306-3278. Or email me, charles@threeoaksmgmt.com. And I believe both those will be in the show notes. And just tell me that you heard me on Sam's show and that you're interested in joining the session. And we can definitely set you up in that.
That's awesome. Hey, Charlie, thank you so much for your time, man. This was awesome. Certainly appreciate your insight here.
Sam, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.